my life gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. Cause I can't stop the war.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. Today we're going to discuss the Pizzagate scandal again and the involvement of the Clinton Foundation, the CIA, DynCorp Corporation, convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, George Soros, and the NGOs in the global human trafficking and organ harvesting networks. My guest today is the fantastic investigative researcher George Webb. His ongoing open-source investigation has exposed a criminal network of high-level government officials and corporations that have been creating crises and manufacturing wars all over the globe for many years. He has created a video series on YouTube that investigates the crimes and scandals surrounding the Clinton Foundation and its many donors. George's investigation is the most important research out there right now. I posted many of his articles and videos on my Facebook page for listeners to refer to. I'm going to bring George on now and have him explain what drew him into this investigation, and I'm going to give him a pretty much free rein on this show because there is so much to cover and we've only got an hour. So welcome to the show, George.
Hey, Evelyn, how are you? Good to talk to you again.
Yes, good to talk to you. So you want to just give a brief explanation of what drew you into this investigation to begin with, and then we can go from there.
Sure. 127 days ago, a couple of reports came out that really caught my interest. And it kind of built from a whole summer of, I think we all went through the same thing. I'm a kind of a Bernie Democrat. And I think, you know, Susan Sarandon is kind of my, the person I think of when I think of a Bernie Democrat, I guess. And, you know, she watched all the news of the DNC shenanigans and then went to the convention and saw the shenanigans there. And then there was people dying and Seth Rich and Sean Lucas. And then we saw the Podesta leaks and so forth and all the stuff that they did to kind of, you know, kind of push Bernie out. And I think all that was still kind of you know, just kind of negative feeling. But then this article came out about the 650,000 emails that Huma Abedin had. And there was a police chief named Boyce in New York that said there's all this sex trafficking and child exploitation and all these horrible things that were happening in these emails. And that's when I started kind of investigating. And at the same time, the ex-Foundation CEO of the Clinton Foundation was rumored to have made a run for the Russian embassy in New York.
For asylum, huh?
For asylum, yeah. Now, some people say that there was a closed-circuit television picture of him. Other people say it was hushed up. But, you know, so that's still a rumor. But that was enough for me to start the series.
Right, and he was the head of the Clinton Foundation then, right?
Yeah, so it started with the Clinton Foundation. I started looking into, and I was really building off of Peter Schweitzer's book,
right.
Clinton Cash.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was doing was engaging a lot of researchers on the web, a lot of people. There's just so much incredible talent all over the world. And I mean, I met people from all over the world doing this research. And it's amazing how altruistic, nobody's being paid. But people want to see justice happen. And they're not really, like, vindictive. They don't really want to hurt Hillary Clinton. They just want to see it go away. They just want to see all this stuff that's all this backroom dealing and extortion and threats of violence and so forth on people. They just want that to go away. It's kind of like that organized crime thing. You want the organized crime out of your town and just kind of have a regular town. It's sort of that feeling that is out there among the researchers.
Right. Yeah. And so what did you find?
Well, it's been a kind of a winding path. You know, when you follow the facts, it's never the straight line that you think it's going to be. It always surprises you. And like I say, I gave to Bernie 5 or 6 times. You know, I wasn't really a huge Trump fan, but I definitely didn't want Hillary because I wanted to see a change over the Bush-Clinton kind of years. And I just followed the facts. And it kind of led me to this company called DynCorp. And this company does, it started with the CIA basically doing the maintenance of their planes, of the CIA helicopters and planes. But it was one of those things that as soon as they started flying these flights, they were like, well, if we're going to fly a part all the way out to, and I'm talking all over the world, they had the contract, we may as well bring cocaine the way back, you know. I mean, it would be a shame to have a whole, you know, load here, an empty load coming on the way back. And so DynCorp is, starts out in kind of the drugs coming into the United States and arms going out to support these different, you know, groups, you know, these different kind of insurgency groups.
Right.
But over time, what I found was this DynCorp got into IT, into, you know, information technology, and they ended up doing the information backbones, the databases, for almost 30 of the largest government agencies, including the backbone for the FBI. And it was just not a place where you want somebody who's involved in, you know, kind of organized crime from the drug trafficking point of view to be the kind of the cop who's running all the information. And then I started looking into their police contracts where they were policing in places like Bosnia and Kosovo and in Africa, several countries in Africa, Afghanistan, Iraq, Haiti. And everywhere they go, they just kind of leave this trail of sex trafficking where they encourage their employees to take very young brides and then sell them and get younger brides. And then this really super disturbing thing that started in Kosovo in 1999 with organ harvesting. So not just sex trafficking, but and child trafficking, but organ harvesting. So it's been a wild ride. Let's just say
right,
that this whole investigation has been a wild ride.
Right, because you started out at the beginning of your videos, and I post your videos, you know, links to your to your whole list of videos, so people can watch from the start. And people that did watch from the start, you know, you started out, you were following the lines, looking for oil and arms trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, and then as you went along, you know, and if people watch these videos, you are so good in these videos. You know, you have all the pictures and you point to all the people. It is so good to watch your videos. And by watching them from the start, you can really figure out how it all lays out. And believe me, you are a fantastic investigative researcher because I don't know anybody that could have put this together like you have. You know, I mean, I reported on war profiteering a lot in the mid-2000s, and I never found the organ trafficking networks and the child trafficking networks like you did. You know, I did just follow the arms and the oil. But, yeah, you have really... And you have
revealed horrifying details. Yeah, there's an old saying that, you know, one of the guys I follow as a writer is Eric Larson. And he wrote Devil in the White City. It was a fictional work, but it was partly based on a factual kind of a mass murder at the Chicago World's Fair in 1896. And what he said is every quote that I use in the book, every quote, every time a character says something and there's a quote, there's a piece of paper, there's a sourced piece of paper behind that. So you can check that. And to me, that's the standard of reporting, which is everything I say, I can point to a source that says that. Now, there may be competing sources. And I always try to use the Pulitzer Prize winners. I always try to use Cy Hirsch. I always try to use, you know, the James Risens and the Mark Mazzettis of the New York Times and so forth. But, you know, other times I'll say things that are a little bit more working theory, but I'll have a couple of sources that people can look at and say, oh, I see where he's getting that.
Right.
And I just connect dots. I'm like Peter Dale Scott. I don't really do any, I do some, I shouldn't say that. I do some first-person reporting. And I have over 25 years. But most of the reporting I do is external sources, connecting the dots.
Right. Yeah. Well, you sure connected them right, I'll tell you. So basically what they've been doing, they're overthrowing all these countries, and they're just moving in, and they just start right off the bat with the child trafficking and the human trafficking, and then go in and get the organs from the people, kill the people, take their organs, and then they're dealing. And you talk about these rat lines to these countries. And really, the rat lines usually follow where they want to put oil pipelines, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
In these countries.
Well,
yeah.
The first thing you have to do in any kind of, military operation is clear land and then protect it. You know, you create a perimeter and you protect it. Well, once you have that, all the civilians in that area, in that corridor, which I call a rat line, and it's well known in military circles, that's collateral. Everything in between the two lines, let's say you have a 30-mile corridor like they did in Syria, all the people... are collateral. So the men are organ donors. The women are going to be, used as, sex trafficking. And the children are commodities to be sold to the Middle Eastern sheikhs as young brides. So it's an immediate return. Before the oil wells come in and start pumping the oil, you have an immediate return on your investment for your rat life.
Sure, sure. This organ harvesting, I always like to have you point out how much they're making off of each body.
Oh, you know, it's one of those things where I never wanted to go there, and how much I've learned about organ harvesting. But it's not only the heart is worth so much, $200,000, and the kidneys are worth 50 or 100 or 200, or I've even heard as high as 250, depending on how young the kidney is. There's like 600,000 people, I guess, in the United States on dialysis. So, all those people are waiting for kidneys at some point. So especially kidneys, the market is just, there's sky's the limit. But then there's also bone marrow, and then there's also stem cells that can be mined.
What kind of money do you make off of stem cells and
The bone marrow is the most valuable thing in your body, and you can mine that from somebody 17 days after their death. There's a famous case with Alistair Cook, who, I don't know if you remember Masterpiece Theater, but his body was recovered in what they call the New Jersey Boneyard case. And I think his body was 93 years old when it was mined for bone marrow. So it shows you even a 93-year-old has value in the graveyard for bone marrow. And I've had other bone and bone graft and tissue doctors talk to me, and skin graft people talk to me about how valuable all that is for different cancers and using a replacement therapy, and how that's so much better than using artificial things that could be rejected and so forth. So it really is an area where I just had no idea how valuable the human body is, especially if you're brain dead. And you're not quite dead, like that Monty Python scene where the guy's not quite dead on the death cart.
Right.
And the guy says, be quiet, don't be such a baby, you'll be dead in a minute. Your body is worth the most brain dead.
Really?
So,
okay.
Yeah,
well, sure.
Because you can do what they call a hot swap. You don't have to cool the organ down. If you cool the organ down cryogenically, you're going to have some what they call ischemia, that's lack of oxygen to the cells that need it. You have some cell death, but the best of all worlds is a hot swap where you have the donor on one table and you have the recipient on the other, and you go right from one to the other. But they're cryogenically freezing all this stuff too, cryogenically freezing blood vessels, cryogenically freezing, like as I mentioned, bone grafts. So it's quite amazing. It's kind of like getting into being an undertaker, which is not a very popular job. But
well, down in Haiti,
anyway,
and in these places,
it's one of,
in these war zones. They set up hospitals and everything to pull this off, don't they?
Yes, we do. And there, a lot of people, I mean, this is, again, third party, but the MASH hospitals that, you know, you see the MASH, the TV show and everything.
Right.
A lot of people say, this is internal CIA type rumor, that the MASH hospital and one of the guys, the early transplant doctors, it wasn't Christian Barnard, but I believe it was, the guy at DeBakey. At Houston, was one of the early developers of the MASH hospital for exactly this reason, for, you know, recovery of tissue. Setting up a sterile environment in a war zone. So I haven't run that down to fact yet, but that's CIA rumor. But DeBakey was very much involved in the spoils of war, looking at the spoils of war and how they could, you know, be used, you know, how tissues and so forth could be reused.
Well, what about all these old politicians like George Bush Sr. and his wife and Kissinger and all of them, and how many heart transplants and stuff have they had? And, you know, they're so old and they fly around the world, you know, like they're 60 or something, you know. Ask other people that are that old if they can travel around. I mean, my grandma lived to be 100, and I'll tell you, she couldn't have flown all over the world and did all this stuff.
Yeah.
But how many heart transplants have they had?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but they say the droopy baggy eyes like George Soros has and David Rockefeller has and Kissinger has and George Bush Sr. have and Barbara Bush has,
right,
that, is a sure sign of multiple, for some reason, the skin sloughs, and they haven't figured out how the collagen, you know, to get that to reflect the true, it still reflects the true age, but yeah, George Bush Sr. looks pretty spry, you know, for 88,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
All of them do, those old people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they probably got transplanted everything in their body.
Well, David Rockefeller, I think, is on heart number 7 or 8, and there's big arguments between 7 and 8, and there's some 7 people out there on the Internet, and then there's the 8s out there on the Internet, and I try to stay out of the argument. I'll just suffice to say he's had a lot. So,
right. Well, I just wanted people, listeners, to hear this because I never even knew that you could have multiple heart transplants and stuff. And so, you know, I mean, up until this your investigation and I learned this, you know, I'd wonder how these old people can be so active and, you know, like I said, fly all over the world and everything else. Well, now we know. Their whole bodies are made over with stolen organs.
And
where do they pick? Where do they pick these organs from that they put in them people?
Yeah, it's an interesting, there's a whole bunch of interesting theories, and I don't really have a lot of proof on this, so I won't go into too much speculation, but I'll do a little. There was a theory of, and this goes back to the Nazis, where you would deliberately, as a male, sire about 5 or 6 different extra children. But 5 or 6 different extra wives. So you take over a territory, and then you would have, you know, 5 or 6 kids. And just on the betting on the future of medical technology, that if you ever did need a kidney or a heart or whatever, they knew about the allosteric, you know, kind of rejection at that point. They weren't quite sure because we hadn't gotten into the DNA yet and all that sort of thing. DNA wasn't discovered till after the war, but the idea of this hereditary nature and rejection had been developed. They'd done a lot of transplant experiments up until that point. And that idea has kind of stayed with, I mean, a lot of those same scientists, and I'm not talking about just the rocket scientists that came to, you know, start Lockheed Corporation. I'm not just talking about those Nazi scientists. I'm talking about the Nazi medical doctors that came over to the United States, really became the heart and soul of the CIA and the CIA's thinking about, longevity and kind of like this, you know, kind of like Wall Street's army. And there are, again, this is CIA folklore, but there are rumors that this has happened with the CIA over the last 70 years, where CIA agents are encouraged to, you know, spread, sow their seeds, as it were, to 5, 6, 7 different women in foreign locations.
Right.
And should they ever need an organ or whatever, they would have, you know, if it would just be a kidney, then they wouldn't have to have an industrial accident by their child. But if they would need a heart or something, then the child would have an industrial accident.
Yeah, they'd kill the kid off and take it.
And then they would get the heart.
Right. So they've been doing this. I mean, the Clintons got involved in this. Well, they started back in, was it the 80s, when they were involved in that drug trafficking in Arkansas, in that Arkansas airport?
Yeah, well, MENA Airport was created by Ollie North and George Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush, and I think everybody accepts this fact. And then Hillary Clinton was going to be the accountant or the lawyer that basically handled that operation. There was other operations in Los Angeles and so forth that Gary Webb reported on.
Right.
But Hillary was going to handle that traffic. The movie The Firm was done about that operation. And there's going to be a movie later this year that's going to be, it was going to be called MENA. Ron Howard is going to be the director. I think it's going to be called American Anthem or something like that. It's American something. But it's, they kind of cut out the CIA part and they just made it Barry Seal, the pilot. But that's how it kind of all started with the drug thing. But the Clintons kind of, you know, always take whatever the Bushes do and kind of turn up the volume.
Right.
And the one thing they turn up the volume on was this organ harvesting. That's definitely a Hillary thing, that the Bushes really just didn't do as much as Hillary has done in that area.
And, you know, this is so embarrassing for me, you know, because I supported the Clintons. When Clinton was in office, I supported them fully. And then to find out, you know, I never paid attention to what they were doing, you know, tearing apart this country in every direction. And all these wars in the Balkans, you know, they were doing this over there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I voted for Bill Clinton twice. I read all of his autobiographies. I'm still kind of a supporter of his, you know, what he did as president, you know, as far as, you know, you look at his economic record and so forth. I always thought he was one of the most intelligent presidents ever. Now, admittedly, he has a lot of bad habits. But I always thought if I had to have a debate person or an attorney, I would want Bill Clinton to be my attorney.
No,
you know,
right.
Just because he's about as gifted as a speaker, you know,
as
thinking
on
his feet is, yeah, as a liar as well. But I mean, you can't get any better than Bill Clinton. You know, I mean, that's as good as you get.
Well, he has to be pretty good. I mean, he won me over and went through all that impeachment crap with them and everything else, you know.
Yeah.
I feel so stupid.
Yeah, no.
I'm not kidding you.
It's amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
But, you know, I think also, you know, there's a difference between Bill and Hillary, which is, you know, and I've studied them both a lot. Bill really did, you know, he just wanted to be loved, you know, in my opinion. This is my opinion now. But Hillary didn't care really about being loved. She just wanted to be feared. And that really, I think, is the difference between the two of them, and why she didn't win and why he won twice.
Yeah. Well, I think she wasn't going to win because those Pizzagate emails came out the weekend before the election. And I'll tell you, more than one person told me they weren't voting for any pedophile. And
right.
So, you know, everybody can say why she lost. That is what was the nail in her coffin. I mean, all the other trash and garbage she'd been up to had come out over the year. But that final nail, that's the worst crime anybody can commit, is sexually abusing and murdering little children. And that's what cost her the election. Thank God that WikiLeaks was able to finally get them out.
Yeah, and the thing I bring out in my series is that children are a resource to Hillary. They're a
bait. Yeah, explain that.
Bait. They're jailbait because what I can do if I have, let's say 12 girls that are all, and the movie Whistleblower does a good job of this. They show an orphanage of about 40 or 50 girls. Right. That allows me to, let's say that was in the United States, that allows me to compromise hundreds of politicians, hundreds of judges, hundreds of police officers at all levels, and with 12 girls, if I move them around in the right way, I can basically compromise everyone at the state, local, and federal government level in no short order.
Was in Rwanda, right?
Well, that's not the only place. Whistleblower took place in Kosovo.
Okay. Explain to them how they can do that, how they get to control everybody with this blackmail.
Well, this goes back to Jeffrey Epstein. And I was slightly involved in Jeffrey Epstein's case, but let's just take the Orgy Island or the Little St. James Island off the coast of British Virgin Islands. I think it may be actually in the U.S. Virgin Islands, but it's right off the edge of Puerto Rico.
Right.
What I would do is, let's say, have a world conference on living forever, okay?
Okay.
And I would bring in Stephen Hawking and some other folks that have maybe had heart surgeries and so forth, and I would bring in world celebrities from all over the world who were interested in living forever.
Yeah.
And then I would have a little seminar that, you know, Stephen Hawking would talk a little bit, and then somebody else would talk a little bit. And somebody would be talking about stem cells, and then, you know, Peter Thiel, the guy who runs Palantir Software, the gay guy who spoke at the Republican National Convention, he'd be talking about transfusions, and then somebody else would come in and talk about stem cells, and somebody else would come in and talk about transplants. Okay?
Okay.
So we'd be done with our day. And then some people would fly home, but then other people would say, hey, let's have a party over at Jeff's house.
Now, you're Jeffrey, right? Or who are you?
What's that?
When you're arranging this conference, who are you?
Who are you talking as? I'm talking, you could be Prince Andrew from the United Kingdom. You could be Paul Kagame, who was the democratic dictator or the dictator of the Democratic Republic of Congo. You could be a famous lawyer that I won't mention his name, one of the most famous CNN lawyers right now.
I'll name him.
You could be
Dershowitz.
Okay.
I don't care.
Alan can sue so easily. I don't use his name.
Me so I could have access to all their documents and stuff and discovery.
Yeah,
I wish
they
had somebody sue me, one of these people.
Yeah. So. Well, anyway, these are all files that the West Palm Beach Police Force compiled. But basically, I would spread out, and I'm Jeff Epstein now, I would spread out a whole bunch of photos on a glass coffee table of all these different girls, and you would sit there as, let's say you're an African dictator, or you're from Europe, or you're from a general from CENTCOM in Tampa, Florida. You've flown out there. You'd pick out the girl you wanted, and then they would set up a massage for you, and then they would drug the girl, and then you, whatever. Well, what they didn't know was there was 12 low-light cameras. So while you were having your way with this 12-year-old or 14-year-old or whatever it was, and you're the 60-year-old general, that they had you on film. And they would put a little teddy bear or some kind of weird art in the room with you.
Mm-hmm.
So later on, nothing would come of it. You'd fly home, everything would be fine, and then all of a sudden, let's say you're, Senator Menendez from New Jersey.
Right. Yeah.
Up comes the National Defense Authorization Act, which they normally pass around Christmas or New Year's when everybody's, you know, worried about their family and having holidays.
Right.
And you just, if they were going to vote against it for some reason, you would just send them a picture with that little teddy bear. You know, you just send them a little picture, season's greetings, you put a little bow on the teddy bear, and, you know, in that room, And then they would go, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And that's not
your
good.
Vote's important.
Yeah.
I mean, this is sad. You know, I'm feeling guilty here because as you tell this tale, I'm picturing it, you know, and I'm picturing the characters that you're talking about and everything, and I know their backgrounds and I know their involvement in all this. And I'm giggling here, picturing them, getting this little card with the picture of the bear and we'd like your vote or something, you know. But yeah. I shouldn't, this is not funny to people who don't know about this, all of this rubbish, you know, that I am so seasoned now from investigating all this for a year and a half that, you know, I giggle when you tell me those things because I picture Menendez getting a note like that. And yeah. I guess I shouldn't be laughing about this at all. It isn't funny.
Well, in Menendez, I mean, the flip side of it is if you go along with it, then you get all the rewards. So it's kind of like the old Rockefeller thing. If you join my company, I'm going to make you rich. You're not going to be as rich as you would have been. But if you fight me, you're going to end up dead, and your family's going to end up dead. So, so that's kind of the choice you make. What's interesting about this investigation, though, is it's kind of come back to Hillary. You know, I was kind of focused on DynCorp for a while.
Right.
And recently, the story has kind of moved back toward Hillary again. And you would think, oh, no, she's out of the race and so forth. No, she's kind of doing this counter-coup thing now, and she's using this FBI guy that she's used for a long time to do electronic surveillance, this Andrew McCabe. He's the number two guy at the FBI.
Yeah.
She's used him on and off ever since Bill's impeachment to kind of spy on different folks. Well, she's kind of increased the use of electronic surveillance as the years have gone by. And now with Trump and these leaks that have come out, it turns out that, you know, like, for instance, Michael Flynn had this conversation with the Russian ambassador. Well, it turns out that there's only one law enforcement agency that could have authorized that, and that's the FBI, in order to intercept his communications. So it's someone at the FBI had to order that wiretap. Well, you have to go to something called the FISA court, which the FISA court was put in as a check so people weren't just wiretapping everybody at random.
Nice.
Well, someone had to order a wiretap on Mike Flynn, you know, and that's going to come out. You know, so there's a whole bunch of things that happened today where they were talking about Mike Flynn and Mike Flynn's contact with the Russians, and it's all kind of backfiring on Hillary again. This Adam Schiff from the House Senate Intelligence Committee is out there saying, oh, there's this big connection between Trump and the Russians. The House Intelligence Committee chairman came out this morning and said, hey, the FBI came over and said this was total BS. So it's all coming back to Hillary again. Because Hillary ends up installing three of these 20-somethings, three 22-year-old, 23-year-old, and 24-year-old brothers. They're called the Awan brothers, A-W-A-N, Awan brothers.
Right.
These three Muslim brothers that turn out to be making $160,000 a year as 20-somethings, under 25-somethings, working in, and guess what? They have admin level access to all of our House Intelligence Committee's information.
Really?
So the story, that's as of today. That story is as of today. So it's this original thing that I started 127 days ago about the 650,000 emails is come full circle now, because they're talking about this investigation into leaks. It'll lead back to these Awan brothers, and the Awan brothers are going to lead back to these 650,000 emails, because the contents of those emails are going to be the 19 different State Department employees that were using Gmail to avoid the Federal Records Act. So it's really been an interesting investigation, because it just keeps circling back on itself with current events.
Right. Well, you know, with the Clinton, I was watching one of your videos, and did you say that the Clinton Foundation set up their own private army?
Yeah. They contracted with a private army. The company's name was Osprey Global. And Osprey, I think, is one of the largest winged birds, I think, like an albatross. An Osprey can see all, it can fly forever, that kind of thing. There's a surveillance plane in the Osprey, I think, has one of those, it can fly up, straight up, it can tilt its rotors up and fly up like a helicopter, and then it can fly forward, so it can do tremendous lift, you know, and then fly anywhere. So anyway, I think that's what they named it after, Osprey Global, which is basically we can lift up these little mini tanks. They're like one-man tanks and helicopters. We can fly them anywhere in the world. We can drop them in at night by parachute, you know, from this Osprey Global, you know, plane, and we can fire chemical weapons into the town that you're trying to take over, and then we can incapacitate everybody in the town, and then we can run your Muslim Brotherhood gang, whichever country we were in. They can shoot all the people in their sleep, all the men in their sleep. They can take all the women prisoners, and they can take all the children prisoners. And then we can do that city after city after city. And that's what Osprey Global does. These tanks fire these chemical rounds of sarin gas with just enough concentration to knock everyone out until the insurgents can go in and shoot the men and collect weapons and then, you know, imprison the children and women.
Right. Well, didn't Hillary use that army to overthrow Libya?
Oh, absolutely. I can show you emails where from Sidney Blumenthal to General Grange, they're in the same company, by the way, saying General Grange has a plan to take Tripoli to Hillary Clinton. And I can show you emails from Tyler Drumheller, who used to be the CIA head in Europe. I can show you emails from him to General Grange and to Sidney Blumenthal, who's also a part of Osprey Global, that says, you know, here's the plan for Sudan, here's the plan for Libya, here's the plan for Syria, et cetera.
Right.
So, I mean, one thing about my research is I go to source documents wherever I can, so it's in the hand of the conspirators, so I don't even have to quote a source, a third-party source. If it's written in the hand of the conspirator, it's the best possible source that you could have.
Oh, exactly. Great. You know, and now, did you happen to see that that interview that John Podesta gave?
No.
You know, you didn't watch that interview? Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know which one you mean.
Well, it's the latest one. I mean, he talked for probably 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Talking all about Pizzagate and that poor James Alphonsus that runs that place being picked on, and you know, this was just all made up, and the Russians probably are behind it. And I posted that video on my Facebook page, and I put, yeah, the Russians are behind it. They planted all those emails in John Podesta's account for years on end. You know?
Yeah.
How insane.
Well, I think, I mean, what I was saying before about using these the females at Jeff Epstein's island,
right,
and then filming people, they've run this operation. They call it a brownstone operation. They've run these brownstone operations. The DC Madam, there was two different DC Madams that ran it. Dennis Hastert had one. Barney Frank had one at his house, at his brownstone. The Franklin scandal was one. The one that they ran in Boulder, Colorado, with the JonBenet one, they had one there. They had one at Second Mile with Jerry Sandusky. They've had several in Tampa for the Generals. At CENTCOM, they've had several down at Mar-a-Lago. They've had numerous ones in Texas. They've had ones in Wisconsin. They've had one in San Francisco, Los Angeles with Scientology.
Where in Wisconsin?
We're in Wisconsin, Madison.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah.
So they got this
thing all over. The thing about all these the serial killers all the time, mm-hmm. the serial killers are always finders. They're usually finders, or what they call stringers. They're finding new people for the pedophile network, right? So, okay. like Gacy was a finder, Dahmer was a finder.
They're the ones that go out and kidnap these kids, eh?
No. They basically just recruit them to the network, and then they get them to, hopefully be willing participants. You know, normally they show child porn to them, and they try to, get them to, an older boyfriend to get into the group. If they don't go willingly, then sometimes they're kidnapped. And then they use them for a while, then they run around in these little rings from city to city for a couple of years under duress. Or sometimes they're held at a house for a couple of years. And then when they finally get too rambunctious or whatever, then they're killed. But that's... this whole idea of the serial killer acting alone is almost comical. It's just the same thing happening over and over. The Zodiac Killer and the Son of Sam and all these things, they're all just cleanups for these finders networks that are happening over and over again. And the reason is, I know this sounds macabre, but the reason is sound. The CIA wants control. They want control of the political lay of the land. They want control of the law enforcement, and they want control of the judiciary. They want control of all three branches of government. The CIA is the army of Wall Street. It doesn't want any restrictions, like constitutional restrictions. So these brownstone operations are the perfect vehicle for that.
Right. So then they go into these countries like in Libya and they go and steal all the resources. How much gold did they steal from Gaddafi after they killed him?
Well, they say Gaddafi had $80 billion in gold. He was trying to create a gold-backed currency, a dinar, in Africa. I have an email from Sid Blumenthal to Hillary saying they found $9 billion of it. Mm-hmm. So I think they got $9 billion. There was also supposed to be where Gaddafi had hidden a lot of the gold all over mm-hmm. Africa. So yeah. Who knows if they found all that. But I'm sure they would find people they would torture and so forth to find the location of other places and then try to find it all, I'm guessing. I'm guessing it's all been found.
Right. Now, this James Alifantes from that Comet Pizza, he's involved with the CIA, isn't he?
Oh, sure.
Doesn't one of his relatives is on a board of one of them fake orphanages down in, isn't there 650 orphanages they set up in Haiti to kidnap kids from?
Yeah, I think it's Moran, I can't remember exactly, Moranis, I'm not remembering the name straight off the bat,
right.
But yeah, he was his legal, it's the same lawyer who represented him when he was sued. He was sued for, a blackmail case for like $650,000.
$850,000, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. It was a big six-figure settlement. But the reason mm-hmm. is that's the black, that's the brownstone operation where they're saying, hey, you're a politician here in, or whatever, in Washington, D.C. Got two choices. Give Hillary a, $600,000 contribution, or I'm going to, play this film on the nightly news.
Right.
So anyway, that's how I know he was involved in the brownstone operations.
Point where they're all blackmailing each other.
Excuse me.
That they all have the goods on each other. And they even have lawsuits.
No, it doesn't work like that. The CIA has what they call a directorate. And the directorate is a group of, just think of, you know, it's 12 wise men or 12 whatever men who all make all the decisions. And you don't argue with the 12 wise men, you know, and their decisions. And when they say there's an operation that should happen, it happens. And then if anybody goes against that, they're eliminated. So it's a very no forgiveness blood network when you go into it. When you go into it, you have to give total allegiance. And if you ever talk about it, you're risking your life.
Well, they sure got a lot of people involved in it to think that they aren't running by the mob rules. How many people talk? Who knows a secret? it's
yeah.
a secret.
Well, that's
anymore.
True. I mean, well, a big part of what the CIA does is leverages organized crime networks. Because, for instance, if you look at after World War II, when we're trying to overthrow, the Soviet Union in 13 different Eastern Bloc countries, we could either train our own people and train them how to speak Polish and train them how to speak Latvian and train them how to speak all the different languages, or we could just go to the country right there and go to the criminals that already exist and just sign them up. And that's what we did. That's exactly what we did. And that is what we did in the United States. The CIA, when it was first formed, went to the organized crime because they did not want to go to the Congress to ask permission to do operations.
Right.
So from the very first day, the CIA operations were funded through organized crime and heroin importing from Italy.
Right.
From the very first day.
And so they created the whole drug epidemic in this country. Our whole government.
They really did. They really did, because up until there's a famous conference, you'll see this in The Godfather, where they're all talking about, you know, if they should have narcotics or not. And
right.
The famous conference is Lucky Luciano and Genovese family. And the Lucky Luciano's like, well, it should have these restrictions and those restrictions. And then the Genovese family says, no, the money's too good. You can't, you know, you can't stand in the way of this. This is the future, you know.
Right.
And they were like, well, we'll just give the black musicians in New Orleans and black musicians in Harlem, and we'll give it to black Latin musicians in Miami. That was the original plan. Well, it didn't work out that way.
No.
It expanded rapidly from the original plan, far beyond their initial attempts to kind of control it.
Right, right. Now, the mafia, now, did they stay away from the organ trafficking operation?
Yeah, I think they have.
I like to think they have higher morals than our politicians.
Yeah, I think the CIA is like I said, it's Wall Street's army, so they're always looking at maximizing the return on investment for invasions, always. So if you... You know, if all of a sudden they found out your fingernails were worth $1,000 a piece, they figure out a mining operation for that. But I do think that for some unbeknownst reason that the mafia does have this kind of code where they do draw the line on a lot of things,
right.
Which is strange. You would think it'd be the other way around, but I would say politicians have none of those restrictions.
No. And the thing is like in Libya now, they're running this operation. They go into these countries, they kill their whole families. I mean, before they killed Gaddafi, they killed his son and his two little grandkids. I mean, what, under 6 years old. They just, and mind control Americans don't think nothing about this. This is just fine. We go and kill the leaders and their families.
Well, it's interesting because the CIA doesn't really kill for, they think all this Satanism and thrill killing and so forth. It's actually very calculated. What they did with the Gaddafi family especially is they wanted, I think it was his son or maybe it was his brother, I can't remember which, and his wife. But they wanted to make sure that there was no other heirs, that they only had to work with a few different people. And they would then sign away because they couldn't just go grab his assets. They had him store all of his assets at HSBC Private Bank in Switzerland,
right.
Geneva, Switzerland, I believe. And what they want to do is encourage the wife to do these 10% joint ventures to get the money out of those bank accounts, which I think they did relatively soon after. I believe they worked on the wife or the brother or the. They were also talking to his son as well. So there was, I think, three different angles they were working to get all the rest of the Gaddafi assets. But that's why they killed all the rest. They didn't want to have that many people to work with.
Yeah.
And they didn't want any heirs, that's for sure. Yeah.
I'd like to see how the people in this country would react if some country came in and killed our president and killed his family members.
Well, we did that in 1963.
Well, you killed the president, but you didn't kill his wife and his kids at the same time.
No, they didn't, but they did kill John John. They did
kill
John John.
Yeah, they killed him, but...
A little bit later on, and they usually do the males. And then keep the females. So the Kennedys is an example of, you know, still to this day, unfortunately, of a CIA hit. And that's just the way it is. I mean, I can't make a blue sky, you know, green. You know what I mean? You got to call it as you see it.
No, we're going to run out of time here. I'm not going to do like I usually do and wait till the last minute. But could you quickly tell people, you know, Comet Pizza, that they're involved in this organ trafficking and stuff too, eh? That you think that they'd grind up the bodies or something at Comet Pizza?
I think what they do is provide a operating theater for harvesting.
Okay.
In that basement. So that's my theory, operating theory. I don't really have any data, but I do think that Johns Hopkins University is one of the beneficiaries of the organs that are trafficked through Washington D.C. in Baltimore.
In another place in Oklahoma, you think too?
Yeah, I think the Baptist Hospital in Oklahoma, the Nazi Zuhi Transplant Center in Oklahoma City, I believe, early on, was one of the recipients of organs from an illegal organ trade.
Yeah.
Not now, when he was starting out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When we learn all this stuff about Jimmy, we learn that this Comet Pizza has a lot more damaging information than just, you know, what's been alleged about Pizzagate. You know, I mean, right. I don't think many people, I mean, I know most Americans I know nothing about this stuff that our country is doing. The Clinton Foundation has been doing this organ harvesting and child trafficking and human trafficking. You know, that, and it used to be that when we had our representatives in Congress, and if we were going to war against a country, you know, they got to vote on it and decide if we're going to. But Clinton Foundation just goes in and starts all these wars, and it doesn't matter if Congress knows about it or not. And they're the ones putting the sarin gas and stuff and blaming it on the president of Syria.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. OSPI Global, I mean, I can show you the emails. And that did happen. A private mercenary force took over Libya and got, you know, Gaddafi's gold. And a lot of the kids from Libya were trafficked into Europe through Malta and Greece, and then a lot of those kids ended up going to UAE, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, as 5-, 6-, 7-year-old, 8-year-old brides as well. Now they've tried, as this stuff gets publicized, what they try to do is now they're saying, you know, Saudi Arabia is saying, well, we're waiting until the girls are, you know, reach puberty, but that never happens. They never wait. So it's just, you know, Saudi Arabia beheaded, I think, 157 people last year as a record. These, if you're doing that, if you're having 50 wives that have the full burqa, you know, you can only see their eyes with the, you know, mesh over the eyes, it's to hide it's to hide these sex trafficked, child trafficked girls.
Right.
And a lot of them are used as domestic slaves and so forth. So it's really something that really is goes back almost like 800 or 900 years. It really needs to stop.
Right, right. And, you know, we don't have time today, but this organ harvesting and stuff is going on in the United States too, isn't it?
I believe it's going on in Chicago. I think there's some in New York. I think there's some in Baltimore to support Johns Hopkins. And I think there's some in Los Angeles, and I won't say what hospital. And I think there's some in Miami, and I won't say what hospital.
Right. But they're carrying this out right in the United States. It's not only these people from other countries that they're murdering and taking their organs. They're doing it right in this country.
Yeah. And I believe also this is happening in Houston with kids over the border. Yes.
Right. Well, thank you so much, George, for coming on. And people learn so much. Come on again soon.
George. I love to, Evelyn. Have a great day.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, people, well, this was horrible subject for you have to learn about today. It's been horrible for me to learn about for the last 6 months. So, well, we will see you next week. Goodbye. I can't stop the world.